to our stone, many institutions, and really, Rav Erskine does not need any introduction here. One of the great leaders of Jewish world today, Rav Erskine.
Tada Rabba, Shalom Lechem. It's a pleasure to see you all again. I'm going to give my pitch in the beginning, not at the end. We have a program for women and for men that teaches Torah on a high level, leading towards freedom. Those interested, especially in the year after college, that's what we've always done in the past also, is teach post-college. And given special instruction to those who want to take all the exams, you know, the special tests for graduate schools, etc., we give an opportunity for them to study that and bone up during that year as well. So, lachshov al zeh. Post-Zionist Zionism. Many people say, Thomas Mann specifically, pity the man who has discovered his idea, because he doesn't have any reason to go on. And there are those who claim that once we've gained Medinat Yisrael, we've accomplished our ideal. That's what I want to talk about. I'll try to do it telegraphically, because I'd really like you to be able to ask me a question. In order to see if we have or we have not, we have to understand what the Zionist ideal really was and is, what the Zionist mission is, what the Zionist vision is. And for that, I would go to the Torah itself, obviously, to God's command to Abraham, Va'eschah l'goy gadol, I will make you a great nation, Bereshit Yud-Bet, Psukim Bet V'Gimel, I will make you a great nation, V'nivrechu v'cha kol mishpachot ha'adamah. You shall be blessed through you all the families of the earth. In other words, Judaism as a nation has a mission to bring blessing to the entire world. Not to separate and to isolate ourselves, but rather to be world leaders in the midst of things. And that's the purpose of our national being. Precisely what is the content of that bracha, of that blessing? So in Bereshit Perek Yudchet, Psukim Yudchet V'Yudet, Avraham Hayom Yihyeh L'Goy Atzum V'Rav, Avraham will become a great and mighty nation. Kiyidativ, God says. Because I have loved him, I have known him, I have chosen him. Maman titzaveh banave et beito acharav, because he is teaching his children and his household after him. Shamro derech Hashem, to take responsibility for the pathways of Hashem, of God. La'asot tzedakah u'mishpat, to do acts of compassionate righteousness and moral justice. I want to make a point very clear. Abraham was not the discoverer of monotheism. Abraham was the discoverer of ethical monotheism. The monotheism of Yahavto Dreyacha Kamocha Zeklal Gadol B'Torah. The monotheism of Shofech Dam Adam Ba'adam Damo Yishafech Ki Betzalem Elokim Asat Adam. The monotheism that teaches that every human being is created in God's image, and therefore every human being is inviolate. Now this is critically important. This is the most important reason why we have to remember the creation of the world, because in the creation of the world is the creation of the human being in God's image. That's critically important. And from time immemorial, this is the mission of Israel because this is the mission of God. From time immemorial, there have been only two philosophical ideologies about what the human being and who the human being actually is. From the pre-Sophists, before Plato, Socrates, Aristotle, to the postmodernists today, only two philosophies. The first, secular philosophy, is that the human being is a complex animal. And according to the laws of evolution, and we learn about man from animal, according to the laws of evolution, it's the fittest to survive. Cleverness is important. Ingenuity, human ingenuity is important if it can create the kind of ornaments that will ultimately make one nation or another the most powerful. That's the first ideology. That started, as I said, with the pre-Sophists. It was agreed upon by most philosophers too. The victor among the spoils. War, Ulysses. War is very important because it tests the mettle of people. It separates the strong from the weak, the brave from the cowardly. Aeneid opens Arma Murunquacano, I sing of arms in the man. Strength and power. And that's what makes the difference. Now this was Sparta, and this was Greece, and this was Rome. And this went down through history, including the Babylonians, and the Persians, and the Turks. Hitler, Nazism, the Übermenschen, the powerful Aryans who were separated from all other nations according to Hitler because of their powerfulness, the Stalinist communism, the Putinist communism, he's a real heir of Stalin, certainly believes in that, to extremist Islam. And tragically, Islam in the days of the Rambam was extremely enlightened. It was Sufi Islam, and it saw jihad as an intellectual and spiritual battle. Tragically, that's not Islam today, in any of its forms. Not in Shia Islam, not in Sunni Islam, certainly not in ISIS Islam. But unfortunately, Islam has forsaken the Sufi interpretation, and taking the other interpretations, Wahhabi, Sunni, Shia, etc., Shia, etc., and also stands for the powerful are the conquerors, might makes right, and to the victor belong the spoils. The antithesis of this picture is the Torah, that the human being is created with Tzelem Elokim. He's not merely a complex animal. It's fascinating in terms of B'Tselem Elokim, it really is fascinating, that Michelangelo, if any of you have seen pictures of the Sistine Chapel, has all of the pictures of the biblical scenes our Torah, Gospels. It's very fascinating. He differs in terms of the creation of a human being. Anybody remember how Michelangelo portrays the creation of a human being? Finger to finger. God's finger and the human being. It makes very good sense, actually, because what does the Torah say? Vayitzer Hashem Elokim et Adam afar min ha'adama vayipach ba'apav v'nishmat chayim. So God breathed into the dust clay figurine of the first human being. Vayipach ba'apav nishmat chayim, the breath or the soul of life. Vayihi ha'adam l'nefesh chayim. A human being became a living organism. Targum says, Ruach Mamalala, a speaking spirit. But it's fascinating. But very easy to see why Michelangelo couldn't depict this on any kind of canvas, and certainly not on the ceiling of the Sistine Chapel. How do you depict? How can you do it? And he was a painter and a sculptor, and his creativity was in his fingers. So we transposed. God's creativity must also be in fingers. And that's what he portrayed. The Torah is much deeper, obviously. And the Zohar HaKadosh says, and the Tanya, in the first and second chapters, quote this, Vayipach ba'apav nishmat chayim, kol man denafach mitocho nafach. Anyone who exhales from within the essence of himself, kaviyahu. So that what this pasuk actually means is that within every human being is chelek eloka mimah. A portion of God from on high. And therefore a human being is not a complex animal. If he's a complex animal, if an animal is bothering you, you can destroy him. Someone who's weaker than you, everything that counts is power. He's annoying you, you can get rid of him, like we get rid of mosquitoes. But if a human being is created in God's image, and the human being becomes inviolate and inviolable, and he cannot be harmed, he said, it's open it off. He cannot be harmed. An innocent human being certainly cannot be killed. Keep it selam elokim asatata. And the Jewish view is that ultimately tzedakah and mishpat will reign supreme and will master right, will master. That's the Jewish view. And that's the view that has to be spread throughout the world. And that's the job of Zion. Now, I want to start a little bit earlier. I want you to understand it as well as I can get you to understand it. But what you must see is that this is a world view and a world ideal. You know, Yeshayahu, Perek Bet. What's the Chazon Mashiachi? We are a messianic religion. We gave the world the notion of messianism. And we gave the world the notion of messianism because very simply. Because we believe in the perfectibility of humanity and human nature, and that ultimately the world will accept at least the shell of its rope, but in our heart. And we're very optimistic. That's why, what's the first mitzvah in the Torah? Pardon? Achodesh Hazel Lachem Rosh Chodesh. Right. What is that mitzvah exactly? Who started telling you? What's your name?
Shimon.
Shimon. What does the pasuk mean? Achodesh Hazel Lachem Rosh Chodesh. To what? To what? To?
To figure out the calendar in the months.
To figure out the calendar. Okay?
On a loose scale, it's giving time into your own hand.
Again?
Loosely, it's giving time into your own hands.
Okay, that's very nice. Atem afilu atem shofikim, atem afilu atem isidim. Absolutely correct. But Rav Shachin Fol Hirsch says the specific commandment is to declare Rosh Chodesh. To look, HaChodesh in that context means HaChidush Shel HaYareach Lachem Rosh Chodeshim, and this shall be for you the first month of the year, the month of Nisan. Most people count the second part of the Pasuk as if it were the first part of the Pasuk, but it's not, it's the second part of the Pasuk. So the first part of the Pasuk is telling you to mark Rosh Chodesh, the first mitzvah. What Rosh Chodesh says is, after the complete darkness of the sky will always come the light of redemption. It's really Jewish optimism. We're going to soon be Tu B'Shvat. Probably, if you're still here for Tu B'Shvat, I don't think many, most of you will be here, but it'll be snowing around Tu B'Shvat. That's a big snow time. Why is it the springtime, the first day of spring, Rosh Hashanah, Ilanot, etc., etc. So the Gemara says, because the majority of rains have passed. As long as the majority of rains have passed, for us, that's enough reason to celebrate Tu B'Shvat and the holiday of the spring. We're very optimistic people. We believe in human nature, because the human being is created in Tzelem Elokim. We believe in the perfectibility of human nature, and we, the Greeks, never began to believe like that. The Greeks believed that life is a tale of the world, and life is a tale told by an idiot, full of sound and fury, signifying nothing, that's from Shakespeare, but it comes from the Greek notion of tragedy, and the tragedy of the world, and life. We were a very different view. And that right will ultimately triumph over might. Now, God's vision to Abraham, a mission to Abraham, lasot tzedakah u'mishpat, and to teach future generations tzedakah u'mishpat, that's what we call the first covenant for the Jews. What was that covenant? Help me. What was that covenant? I'm sure you know it. The Brit Bein HaBetalim. Correct? Reshit Perek Tetva. Now this covenant was not a very easy one. There was a great darkness. Eiva. Chashecha. A dark black fear that descended upon Avram Avinu. Avram is in a deep sleep in a Tardeima. God shows him an image of three animals, cutting the animals in half, and the blood between the pieces. And God passes between the pieces. And Avram is there between the pieces. And the two birds, representing the Jewish people, will not be destroyed, will not be cut to pieces, and will bring the message, ultimately, of redemption to the world. But that's the Brit Bein HaBetalim, and there's a lot of blood involved. The Brit Milah is an extension of the Brit Bein HaBetalim, so it is in the Chumash as well. With every generation, from generation to generation, the organ of propagation, the Brit Milah, Jewish fate by Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik Court. It is the Brit of Goral, the Brit of Jewish fate. We will have to suffer because of our message, because the nations of the world are going to hate us because of our message. That's Yeshayahu Perek Nun Gimel. We are the suffering servants, because we, as Rabbi Yehuda Levi says it, are the conscience of the world. The nations don't want to hear our morality, because as Nietzsche correctly understood, morality impedes the power of the powerful, and they don't want their power impeded. And we, as the conscience of the world, try to impede that power. And that's the secret of Jewish suffering, the reason why there is anti-Semitism. But our belief that ultimately we are going to win, that's God's promise. That in the end, Yechacha v'Kzir HaShemayim Misham Yikabetzcha Hashem Elokecha V'Misham Yikachecha, God will take us from the furthest of the exiles, will bring us back to our homeland, and ultimately we will bring the blessing of redemption to the world. Yeshayahu Perek Bet. There'll be a Beit HaMikdash secure in Yerushalayim. V'na'aru elav kol ha'amim. All nations will rush to it. They would say, Yoreinu b'drachav, Nelchav ba'orchotav. We'll learn from the ways of Israel. We'll walk in the paths of Israel. Chetetu charvotam leitim v'charitotayim l'mazmerot, lo yisa goy el goy cherev lo yinu v'chav v'chava, and there will be world redemption. Clear what I've said? This is Rosh Hashanah as well. This is Judaism in 45 minute action. Malchiyot, zichronot, v'shofarot. Malchiyot. We have to bring God as king to the entire world. In other words, l'takein olam b'malchut shakai. Get all of the nations, l'hafnot et lecha God, kol nish'ei ha'aretz. That's Oleinu, and that's why Chazal say that every statutory prayer must conclude with Oleinu. Its original place was b'malchiyot in Rosh Hashanah. Zichronot Zocher HaBrit, because we are the people of the covenant, and we will do it through the shofarot, whose sounds brought us the revelation at Sinai, and through the shofarot, whose sounds will trumpet our return to the land of Israel. The second covenant. Where is the second covenant, Southern Town? The first covenant, I said, was the Brit Bein Abetanim. We're a nation. In order to bring Tzedakah U'Mishpat to the world, it's going to be a lot of blood. We'll have to suffer, but we'll do it! Where is the second covenant? Somebody tell me. Yes. Again?
Brit?
No, Brit Milah, I said, it's bound up to Brit Bein Abetarim. Brit Milah, it's right after Brit Bein Abetarim within the Torah as well. Brit Milah is the blood of Jewish sacrifice. Tzedakah U'Mishpat, bound up with Brit Bein Abetarim. Where's the second Brit? Yes. Kriyat HaTorah, Midin Natin, Matan Torah. Correct, exactly. Beginning with Shemot Yutet, Yaseret HaDibro. Beginning with Shemot Yutet, the Jewish people are to be a mamlechet kohanim v'goy kadosh, a holy nation and a kingdom of priest teachers. And the Sephardim say it very well. A kohen means a teacher. The Sephardim puts it very, very well. Our task will be to teach Torah to the world. We've lost that. We used to have it. Another lecture. We used to have it. But I'll just give you one example. Mishnah Navot, Perek Aleph. Hayu mitamidav shel Aharon. Ohev shalom, rodev shalom. What's next? Finish it for me. Ohev et abriot, what does briot mean? Everyone, humanity. Or mekarvan l'Torah, because Torah is meant for the world. And the Rambam says, Hilchot Malachim Yerbet, ultimately, everyone will return to the true religion. Kulam yachzeru l'data emet. Everyone will eat together. Probably it'll be a Melchika world, I think. That's what it seems. Certainly Rav Kook felt that way in Sefer Chazon Shalom. But everyone will return to the religion of God. And there will be one world. There's a machloket. It's a machloket actually in Brachot Chazayim. There's a machloket whether everyone will become Jews with the 613 mitzvot, or the non-Jews can just keep the Shema mitzvot b'nei. And understand Hashem and Haftol Reacha Kamocha that emanates from Tzelem Elokim. I think the Rambam is right. Everybody's going to turn to Judaism. Because I think there's nothing like Shabbos. If everybody's supposed to drink Coca-Cola according to the Coca-Cola people, I think anyone who knows and loves Judaism thinks that Shabbos is much, much better than Coca-Cola. And it doesn't have any carcinogenes, whatever that word is. And there's nothing like Shabbos. And the Rambam says that more than one. The people of Mashiach, everyone's going to keep Shabbos. Okay. I want to add just Yechezkel. V'arech b'poseset b'domayich, v'omar lach b'domayich chayi b'domayich chayi. I see that you rule it in your blood because all of this takes the Syrian nation. The nation's not going to like us. V'areich v'proseset b'domayich, v'omar lach, and I say to you, b'domayich chayi, because of that blood that you're willing to give, you live. U'v'shnei damim ha'katuv b'daber, the Torah speaks of two bloods. Which are the two bloods? Which is the first blood? Which is the first blood? Circumcision. Brit Milah. And therefore, according to Chazal, that Yechezkel is talking about the Brit Milah, which the Jews did, still in the Midbar, before they received it. What's the second blood that Yechezkel is talking about? Anybody? Yes? Carbon Pesach, terrific! What's your name?
Jen.
Wonderful. Where did you study?
Igdalos.
Igdalos. Study on board. Rosh Hashanah does a long time. Very good. Very, very good. Great. That's correct. The second blood is Dam HaPesach. And Dam HaPesach also is Ritznai. The purpose of Yitzhak is right. My Rebbe calls Ritznai Brit Yud. The first, the Goral, which is brit. Dam habrit, the brit of circumcision, the fate of the Jewish people, the brit being abtarim. Nobody asks you which nation you're part of. You're born into it, whether you like it or not. And therefore, it's brit goral. And nobody asks the baby if he wants circumcision either. That's what it is for an eight-day-old baby born twice. But it's not we chose. That's why the Rav calls it Brit Yehud. It's the covenant, not of our fate, but of our destiny. A destiny you have to choose. A fate you can be born into. A destiny you have to choose. And that's the second thing altogether. And that's the blood which leads to Geula, to redemption. Clear? Okay? Now I want to try to put it together for a bit. We're still in the midst of a very long war of independence here in the United States. And the last war, I guess, as part of the war of independence, in our time, was Sukkotan, 2-3 summers ago. There was a young boy in Efrat, I knew very well. He has 4 generations behind him in Efrat. Yuval Heman. He was one of those really kind of perfect kids. Through Bnei Akiva, good learner, Ish Chesed, excellent athlete, Alamites. 2 weeks before the war opened up, broke out, he knocked on my door Shabbos afternoon, wanted to introduce to me, wanted to become engaged to a woman, the daughter of a Gabbai of the Shul of Rav Efrat, Shmachat Shirlo. Of course, I wished him a very, very, very warm Mazel Tov. He never got to get engaged. The war broke out. He was killed by Shirley Kovach. I was in America. I took the first plane I could take. I learned to at least be there for the beginning of the ship. When I walked into the Shiva house, I said 4 generations of his family live in Efrat. Great grandmother, also grandparents. His grandparents, Yehuda Heman, is an artist of note. And he sat with me, my Daf Yomi Shir, for 3 cadencio, 21 years. When I walked into the house, Yehuda ran up to me, raised. He wept and I wept. And then all of a sudden he caught himself. And he said, the rule in this Shiva house is no crying. My son and my daughter anymore, my wife and I cry into our pillows at night quiet. The feeling in this Shiva house is the feeling of zechut, not of atzmut, of merit and not of sadness. Because for 2,000 years when Jews were killed in all sorts of persecutions culminating in the Shoah, it was their goral. They didn't choose it. It was hard to understand why. Try to say something about our past, teach the world, they don't want to learn it, they fight us, but still. almost in the same situation. In our generation, we decided to come back to Israel. We decided not to wait for a Mashiach to bring us on a donkey from heaven back to Israel. We decided that we were going to rebuild Israel, we were going to replant Israel, and if necessary, we were going to fight for Israel. But we were taking our destiny in our own hands. This is Brit Tiur, not Brit Golah. We made the decision. And this, the Medinat Israel, is for the future of the Jewish people and for the future of the world. This is Brit Yehud for Ge'ulah, for ultimately world redemption. And for us, this is the Sukkot. And therefore, there's no crying during this Sukkot. Let us again. But Zionism is still a work in progress. Our task is still to teach our message to the world. First to our fellow Jews, and therefore I believe with all my heart it's very important to be to go into Chinuch, to go into Rabbanut, to go into a field in which you can reach out all over the world. Bring Jews back. The tragedy is most Jews don't even know what they were. It's very important. But it's a great privilege to be the generation of Yehud. It's a great privilege to be able to teach Torah in our generation. And it's very important to learn that Zionism is not even halfway there. We made a tremendous stride. It is, as our tefillah says, Reishit Tzvichat Ge'ulatenu, the beginning of the sprouting of our redemption. God has more than done His. He promised us, in Devarim Mami, in the end, the Chacha B'Kzei HaShemayim, Misham Yikabetzcho Hashem Elokecha, Misham Yikachecha. Take us back to the land of our fathers. He has. Now we have to make this the Or LaGoyim. We have to make this country the light to all the nations of the world. We have to teach first our own, but at the same time the world. And there's a fantastic opportunity to do it. We're the only ones. America has given up the fight as long as Obama is president, tragically, unfortunately. America gave a free pass to Iran while Iran was screaming death to Israel and death to America. Sure. America wasn't always like that. The Founding Fathers weren't like that. The first seal, Benjamin Franklin gave to the Founding Fathers, was the Red Sea splitting. The tyrannical Egyptians being killed. The Jews triumphed. But above the seal, Benjamin Franklin wrote, rebellion against tyranny is obedience to God. That's what it means to sell an Elohim. Everybody has to be free. Compassionate righteousness and moral justice. So unfortunately, at this moment in time, Israel is the only one standing up against God. Standing there up against the powers. But it's a great privilege to be in this generation, the generation of our destiny. I would love to, yes. Yes, please, I would love you to ask me. Yes. Please stand up and loud. Oi! How old are you? Oi! Don't say oi, say ah! No lie.
You said towards the beginning of your speech that the goal of the Jewish people is to spread our messages and the like. I just wanted to know, it's fairly clear that the vision of the Torah is that the Jews have a nation state. My question is, if the goal is to spread a message to the whole world, wouldn't one think it would be better not have a nation state, but rather to be spread all over the place, and we have various like shulchan, and like so we can spread our message. So why does the Torah want us all to be in one place and relatively segregated from the world?
Look, I think the Torah understands correctly, and by the way, the European Union is beginning to understand that also, and it's falling apart tragically. But it understands it too. The USSR had a learned that lesson as well. You have to take one God first. Let me put it a little bit differently. God first tried to give such a message to the world and work with that. And then a second time and work with Noah. Both times it didn't work. My Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik once said very presciently that the Torah not only teaches us, teaches us about God, the Torah also teaches God about what humanity is going to deal with. Sometimes God was surprised too, and he almost destroyed the world. Can't start with everyone. You gotta try to take one nation that started with you. You know, the anti-Semite wrote in the Reader's Digest, 1943, which was an anti-Semitic magazine, how odd of God to choose the Jews. The Jewish answer that was not published there, but it was published in the Jewish Spectator. But the same year, Reader's Digest refused to publish it. It was not at all odd, because the Jews chose God. You look at the beginning of Hilchot Avodah Zarah, Abraham chose God. So what God decided was, I'm going to choose from Yahweh. I'm going to take the nation that's choosing me. And I'm going to try to make of them a Mamlechet Kohanim of the Goy Kadosh. Or rather, a Goy Kadosh that will become a Mamlechet Kohanim. And if I can train a nation like that and them to reach out to the world, and especially what will cause the world to learn from us if they see that we are a nation state like they are, and we can deal with the same kind of problems that other nation states deal with. Minorities, poverty, different strata within society, the haves and the have-nots, issues of the stranger in your gates, the weaker vessels, the orphans, the widows, etc. If we are able to do this well, and successfully, then they'll be willing to learn from us. I think the Torah is right on. And I think that the European Union's falling apart shows that as well. Take one nation and work hard with that nation. And from them, we send the emissaries to the world. The Baba Chumabi understood that very well, too. Zechut Zadik Avraha. Other questions? No other questions? You will agree with me? Yes. You have another one. Go on.
No one else has anything to say. The second question is, it seems that in previous generations, when the mission was more sort of establishing the country, then sort of the roadmap is relatively more simple, simply establishing cities, many opportunities available, but also like from a Gashmi perspective, simply like simply developing the country in terms of economically and being a productive worker is what brings the country to where it needs to be established wise. But now that you're talking about how the mission of this generation is to bring it where it is, where it needs to be spiritually, what sort of like real steps does someone who's young starting their life in the land of Israel, what should they be looking to do to help fulfill the post-Zionistic vision?
It's a very, very good question. I think the truth is, first and foremost, in any area whatsoever, because every area can become a transition. In every area, to make certain that the actions of whatever the startup company happens to be, the interpersonal relations between the workers, the businesses that develop, the relationship between the store owners and the people who come as customers, the honesty in advertising, the major principle has to be the after the lachko. The major ideas have to be to that common mishpat. You have no idea how well this is understood. People always know. This guy in the frat, and the frat, we should show up many places in Israel now too, named Rami Levy. Become a very, very wealthy businessman. I don't know if he went to high school. But he believed. I believe with all my heart against the Hilltop Youth, Pat Mechir, and that's a thing. That every human being is created with seven little kids. And that's the Palestinians too. And he starts businesses that are glories to behold. Jews, Palestinians, working together. Customers. Real Kiddush Hashem. I can tell you, with someone who's concerned with Chesed, and we have Chesed packages to people. Efrat gives out some 96 packages every week. He's very free with his tzedakah. God helped him, he's helping others. And he turned the business into a Kiddush Hashem. And a center of tzedakah. Now, I think the best thing anybody can go into, and I say it with all my heart, after some 52 years in Rabbanis, Chinuch, there is nothing like being in God's business. Working the care of Hashem. It keeps you in Torah, it keeps you in learning, it gives you a tremendous opportunity to reach out in terms of chesed and to reach out in terms of bringing. There's no great chesed in giving the Jew back his traditions, his treasures trove, that he didn't even know he had in most cases. But it's true whatever you do. And just like it can be a terrible Chilul Hashem, like ministers of Israel are in certain cases, a Chilul Hashem, be a great teacher. And everyone in Israel should understand tzedakah u'mishpat. But obviously, when a prime minister is going to go to prison, or when a chief rabbi in Israel, a former chief rabbi, is being indicted, it's a terrible, terrible privilege. And religious Zionism has to see that the opposite is what happens. And we need youth. And we need people who do that. Clear?
But how did we reconcile that with the fact that it wasn't created at that point?
created for man. First of all, of course it was created with that in mind. That's God's promise. God didn't make the promise in a vacuum. You don't think that the original Zionists, you didn't have a strong group of very religious, ritualistically religious Jews, like Rav Shlomo Oliver, like Rav Kalischer? Of course we had. But I want to tell you something. Theodor Herzl, David Ben-Gurion were extremely moral people. Golda Meir was a voice of morality for the world. Kiddush Hashem, everything came out of her mouth. Of course we did. Menachem Begin. We lost it during the last small period. The first chief rabbis were also magnificent until last time. They understood they were the rabbis of all the Jews. And they had to speak to all the Jews. And they shouldn't make problems, they should try to bring solutions. Because that's what halacha is all about. But it definitely was created with that in mind. That's the whole purpose. Even secular Jews, Al Gordon, study secular Jews, Acharaam. Not all of them were religious. Many of them were very religious. Secular Jews, the area of Ephrat, the area of Gush Etzion, the four settlements that were here. There were three religious settlements and one secular settlement. And they all believed in Staka and Mishpat very strongly and worked together with a great deal of love. 100%. I'm speaking about tzedakah and mishpat. That should be a universal idea. But that's what makes a difference. That's what it's all about. And the people who founded the country certainly expressed that. As I said, we've lost the moral compass a little bit. But we at least have a strong Supreme Court and we bring our people to justice, even if it's powerful people within Israel. And we're still a lot better than all the other nations around us. Toda rabba lachem.
I just want to thank Rabbi Riskin for making the effort to come. He's tremendously busy schedule. And we wish you, Rabbi Riskin, that you said 52 years in Rabbanut, I've now been streaming far beyond. Thank you for your addressing our group and your leadership. And everything Rabbi Riskin spoke about is what Rabbi Riskin is involved in so many institutions in Israel, serving Israeli Jewry, diaspora Jewry. And we thank you so much, Rabbi Riskin, and I've now been streaming. Good health and happiness, and thank you very much, Yaakov. Rachel Frank is here. We're going to go straight into Rachel Frank. She's going to talk right now, and she'll speak. Just she'll take us through to lunch, and then we'll tell you what's happening from there. Thank you very much, Rabbi Riskin.